This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this exciting edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Our topic tonight, inattentive ADHD or sluggish cognitive tempo clarified. With us in our virtual studio is Dr. Russell Barkley, part of our ADHD Month Awareness Dream Team. We've had Dr. Hollowell on, Dr. Rustain on, and Dr. Brown on, and now Dr. Barkley. We're very excited about this. Tonight is Wednesday, October the 22nd in the year 2014 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some announcements real quick. First, Dr. Barkley always encourages me to kind of make public ADHDfund.com. This is a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small-scale ADHD studies worldwide. Also, the CHAD conference, the annual CHAD conference, is right around the corner. It's this November 13th through the 15th in Chicago, Illinois. I'm looking forward to being there. I hope that you will, too. If you haven't been to an ADHD conference, I encourage you to go. It's a fascinating experience to go. There's a lot to learn, and you can hook up with your tribe. Let's see. Tonight's show was pre-recorded in advance. Dr. Barkley has a very, very busy schedule and very difficult to get a hold of at nights. So we're going to roll a tape in a second. But real quickly, Dr. Russell Barkley is a world-renowned authority on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, having spent his entire professional career studying ADHD and its diagnosis, assessment, and management. He has received numerous citations for excellence in his research and opinions on ADHD and is highly esteemed by other professionals in his field. He received his Ph.D. in 1977 in clinical psychology at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, receiving a Distinguished Dissertation Award for his research on the effects of medication on children with ADHD. He is the author of numerous books, which include Your Defiant Teen, 10 Steps to Resolve Conflict and Rebuild Your Relationship, Your Defiant Child, 8 Steps to Better Behavior, Taking Charge of ADHD. That's the revised edition. Dr. Barkley, really, at the end of the day, you can get a complete bio and access to all his books by going to his website at russellbarkley.org. And I have to say, he's one of the foremost authorities on this. We've had him on the show several times. It's always been cutting-edge information. It has always, always, always changed my understanding of things and benefited my ability to coach in some of the most amazing ways. So without further ado, let's roll the tape. Welcome to the show, Dr. Barkley.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back, Jeff.
We always, you know, this is Attention Talk Radio, and we like to pay attention to attention. And all the shows that we've done on the past with you is right up our alley. So, you know, our first show, we started paying attention to emotion being a part of ADHD, which is, at the time, you know, you were really getting the word out, and it's really illuminated my education of what's going on. Then we started taking a look at ADHD as being an executive function issue and not a deficit of attention, which was really illuminating. And we also did another show one time on the whole gift-curse debate that I thought was fascinating because we took a look at the different factions and how they pay attention to it. And today is no different. You know, I've been following you on this for a period of time. There's research that's suggesting a new attentional disorder called sluggish cognitive tempo, and I think we both disagree, or we don't care for the name. We prefer, like, concentration deficit disorder. But what I hope to do is pay attention to this this potential condition today and get an education, because I think from what I've learned from you, there's some people that might be misdiagnosed, and to me, if you're paying attention to the wrong diagnosis, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. So I guess, can you just tell us what sluggish cognitive tempo or concentration deficit disorder is?
Sure, I'd be glad to, and thanks for having me on the show to talk mm-hmm. about it. Well, let me just start with a few minutes of history here.
Mm-hmm.
The first attention to this disorder actually started back in the early 1980s when the original DSM-3 started to distinguish between two types of ADHD, the ADD with hyperactivity and without hyperactivity. And so people began to study those distinctions. And the long and the short of it is, over a decade, the research didn't really show a lot of reliable differences, but it kept coming back to an interesting finding, and that is people who were being called just ADD, who weren't hyperactive, there was a subset of them who appeared to have a very unique set of attention problems that wasn't really part of ADHD. And so that's where it began, was sort of that studying of subtypes of mm-hmm. ADHD, and then we found that there was a smaller, more homogeneous group of people that seemed to be quite different. For instance, they had a lot of problems with staring, with daydreaming, with being sort of mentally foggy and not really, you know, in touch with what was going on around them. They seemed to be easily confused, had trouble staying alert, were generally underactive, lethargic, kind of slow-moving, didn't seem to process information around them very well. You'd often say something and they'd shake their head and ask you to say it again, you know, so what did you say? They appeared to be frequently lost in their thoughts. That was part of the daydreaming component. And in general, just a lot of trouble with alertness and daydreaming, and then combine that with the lethargic and kind of sluggish approach to their activity level and motor movements. And so this pattern, as it turned out, formed its own dimension of symptoms, completely distinct from ADHD. And that's where we began to get the idea there was something else going on here. There might be a second attention disorder lurking out there that was being misdiagnosed, as you mm-hmm. well put it, as ADHD, but that was well worth beginning to distinguish. And so that's what kind of kicked it off. And people have been publishing about this over the last 20 years or so. But it really was in the last few years that researchers started to pay more attention to this group of individuals. And here again, it was because the subtypes of ADHD in the DSM-4 were breaking down. They weren't useful, which is why DSM-5 got rid of them. But in getting rid of all of those subtypes, people began to hold on to this group and say, don't throw the baby out with the bath. There is something about inattentive-only people, these ADD people, that is unique, and we need to study them in their own right. And that led to a number of projects, and then a special issue of a scientific journal was published in January, and that kicked off some popular media. The New York Times covered this issue.
Mm-hmm.
The French magazine Le Monde has just published an issue this week. The Atlantic magazine is working on an article that's about to come out that's an in-depth paper on this. So even the popular media is sort of perking up and paying attention to this possibility that we have discovered a second attention disorder.
Now, you said you were referencing the inattentive side. So the way it presents itself, it's most commonly mistaken for what used to be inattentive ADD. Is that accurate?
That's correct, yes. The old ADD, now more recently was called inattentive type of ADHD, it tends to masquerade as that. And if people get diagnosed or misdiagnosed, that's where they're going to wind up because there's no other category to put them in officially.
Yep.
And, you know, in order to get paid, you have to tick a box and give somebody a diagnosis, and that'll be the official diagnosis. But it's not accurate. So.
Yep. Now, you talk about its own dimension of symptoms. Can you just talk about, just real briefly, for what a dimension is and begin to talk about what some of those differences are?
Yes. Well, it's better perhaps to exemplify this by talking about ADHD. ADHD is a single dimension that we can usefully separate into two subdimensions, but they're very highly correlated with each other. And by a dimension, we mean that there's a set of symptoms and they cohere to each other. They correlate very highly with each other. People who have one of the symptoms highly likely to have the other symptoms on the list. And that forms this dimension or this trait of human ability in the population. And in ADHD, the two, of course, that are well known are the inattentive dimension and the impulse control hyperactivity dimension. And as I said, those are very highly correlated, and people with one often have the other, but not necessarily always. Now, in the case of SCT, or what I prefer to call concentration deficit disorder, as you pointed out, and by the way, just so your listeners know why the name is changing, is that SCT is very insulting. It's very denigrating and derogatory to people. And although it was invented for an innocent and benign reason back in the 1980s, the field really is on board with changing this name so that it's not so insulting. And CDD is a better term because it's rather bland. It doesn't emphasize that we know so much about the disorder and its mental ability. And it's not insulting or denigrating to people. But back to my point, there are these two dimensions in CDD. One of them is the daydreaming, staring, unfocused kind of dimension, and the other is the lethargic, slow-moving, sluggish dimension. So just like ADHD, there's a cognitive dimension of inattention, but a different kind of inattention, and there's a motor dimension, and that's the sluggishness, which is the opposite of what we see in ADHD, the hyperactivity and impulsivity. So these symptoms that I mentioned before do correlate highly with each other. If you have one, you're probably going to have the others. And these two dimensions I've mentioned are actually really a single, highly correlated entity. And what's interesting is that every time we look for it, no matter how we measure it, this set of symptoms separates from ADHD. It isn't part of ADHD. It's like the distinction between anxiety and depression. They can overlap, but it is very useful to distinguish between the two. And that's what we're seeing here.
Which is this distinction is kind of interesting to me, and I'm going to go to a break for a second and come back and talk about some of those distinctions, because you talk about those, but they manifest in very different ways, which I think can make it kind of clear to understand that these are two really separate things. Now, they can coexist in an individual. They can have both. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, we'll talk about that when you come back, and a little bit more, I'll give you some figures on that.
But again, it is definitely distinct. So before we go to a break, everybody, to learn more about Dr. Barkley, the best thing to do is go to his website, russellbarkley.org. And when you're there, you can get access to his books. There's presentations, and you have a fact sheet. Help me out with it. You have a fact sheet on CDD on that website to learn more. Is that right?
That's correct. It's under the there's a directory there called Fact Sheets. Just look for it. It's one of the subpages. And in there, you'll find a number of papers that I've written for the public. But there is a comprehensive summary of CDD on there, and it's probably the most up-to-date summary right now.
Excellent. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. Russell Barkley, and we're talking about concentration deficit disorder. And Dr. Barkley did a great job framing out the history and illustrating the curiosity that's been formed around this possible different attention condition. Dr. Barkley, as we kind of move in, can we start talking about how it manifests differently in the dimension and compare and contrast to ADD? Because I think there's some really stark differences here that I find fascinating.
Yes, there are, Jeff, and I think that would be helpful. First of all, we do need to recognize that CDD is not yet an official diagnosis. It's not
yes.
in the DSM-5 or the other official catalogs for diagnoses. So people need to understand most clinicians haven't heard of this, and they certainly aren't using it. Instead, what they're using inappropriately is the inattentive form of ADHD, now called inattentive presentation. But these people, I think, are distinct in many ways. And yet, as we found in my national surveys that we conducted 2 years ago across the U.S., we studied kids from 5 all the way up through adulthood through age 91. We found that CDD is a distinct disorder in the population, but that about 40 to 50% of people who had one of these attention disorders also had the other. But we also found that 50 to 60% of people with one disorder didn't have the other. So that's clear evidence that these are not the
yep.
same disorders, but
mm-hmm.
they can coexist, or what we call
mm-hmm.
be comorbid. Now,
mm-hmm.
I like your idea of trying to contrast this with ADHD because people know a lot about ADHD. For instance, let me just give you a couple of examples.
Yep.
There is a sex difference in ADHD, particularly in childhood, and that is that at least 3 times more boys than girls have the disorder. This sex difference begins to decline by adolescence, dropping down to about 2 to 2.5 to 1. Boys over girls. By adulthood, it almost disappears. It's only slightly more likely to be in a male than a female. Now, we don't know the reason for that convergence of sex differences, but in distinction, there are no sex differences in CDD that are worth talking about.
Okay.
The prevalence is the same in boys and girls, in teens, and in adult men and women. The other thing that we found is that where ADHD declines somewhat with age, as you well know, the hyperactivity
yep. Yep.
declines markedly across childhood into adolescence, there was no decline in CDD symptoms across the entire population, across all of the ages that we studied. When this disorder is there, it stays there and shows very little developmental change. So those were some important differences with regard to kind of the demographics
mm-hmm.
around S or
mm-hmm.
CDD. A second difference that we might want to spend a little more time on was in comorbidity or risk for other mental
mm-hmm.
disorders. We found that, as you know, ADHD,
yep.
of course, shows a high risk for oppositional disorder, defiance,
yep.
Somewhat lower risk for conduct disorder and antisocial behavior. About 25% have a risk for substance use problems. And then, of course, the risk declined from there as far as depression and anxiety. But the biggest risks are for these other impulsive, disruptive disorders. In contrast, people with CDD had no risk for those disorders. They had no elevated risk for oppositional disorder,
huh?
for defiance, for antisocial behavior, for drug use problems or conduct problems, but they had a markedly higher risk for depression followed by anxiety. And so what you're seeing here is a complete dissociation between these attention disorders
mm-hmm.
in what risk they carry for having these other problems. So that's yet more evidence that this isn't
yep.
ADHD under another name. This is a unique pattern of
yep.
symptoms. We can talk about some of the other differences if you'd like, but I didn't want to go on yet
yep.
without
but,
allowing you to comment.
No. It's fascinating because you know, again, years ago I heard you. It's like the Swiss Army knife that we can begin to make this distinction and get evidence that they're relatively. I mean, they're clear. But kind of moving forward, I think I understood you talking about ADD is an executive functioning issue, and I think I understood you one time saying CDD is not. Can you talk about
That's
that?
That's correct.
A little bit?
ADHD is a pervasive disorder in the executive system, which you and I spent a great deal of time on in one of your earlier broadcasts.
Yep.
And so it affects everything from inhibition to the two different kinds of working memory to planning and problem solving and organization and emotion regulation and those sorts of things. CDD, on the other hand, has very little relationship to these executive deficits. There's a little bit of trouble with organization, with self-organizing, but it does not show the link to problems with impulse control problems, with hyperactivity, with the difficulties with the impulsive emotion and emotion regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is a problem, as I've mentioned, with emotion, it tends to lean more toward the depression and anxiety aspect, which fits with this kind of daydreaming, pensive, almost obsessive quality of their thinking. And so where there might be a small link to executive functioning, it is nowhere near the degree of relationship as we see in ADHD, where ADHD really is an executive disorder, as we've spoken about before.
Yep.
So those are important differences. There might be a little trouble with organization, but it's not anywhere near as profound a disturbance.
And it's interesting because with that what strikes me and what I've seen is you talk about ADD as being a productivity issue, but CDD to be more one of making mistakes and errors. So if I understand it correctly, those with CDD are productive, but they miss a lot, whereas those with ADHD, it's a productivity issue.
Absolutely. CDD looks to be more of an accuracy problem. So you might be finishing your work. It's going to take you a little longer because you're doing a lot of daydreaming and staring and that sort of thing. It's mainly by your thoughts, not by things happening around you. And so you make a lot of mistakes because you're not really engaged in the environment around you as well as other people are. As you point out, in the case of ADHD, it's more productivity. They're just not getting an awful lot of work done because they're distracted, they're impulsive, they're skipping from one thing to another. They're very much engaged with what is going on around them, and usually that's what gets them off task. So one is kind of outer-directed distractibility, and that leads them not to be very productive. But they don't make many mistakes. The problem with ADHD is that what little work they do is usually right, but they just don't get anything done.
Yep.
Whereas CDD, they may finish their work and half of it's wrong because they really haven't engaged the task fully with their mind. You know, one way of thinking about this that I find helpful is there's a contemporary theory of CDD called mind-wandering disorder.
Yep.
And although we haven't proven that is what is at the heart of CDD, it's a very appealing description of what these people talk about, and that is that their mind tends to wander off onto other things in their mind. And so they become a little more withdrawn from the environment, a little less engaged with it, because they're spending a lot of time daydreaming and thinking about other things. And that's where the mistakes come from. Because as you know, for instance, if you're driving to work, it's a fairly boring activity. So you start daydreaming. You start thinking about other things in your life, about the morning, about your problems, about your schedule coming up. But you're not engaged in the task fully as you ought to be. And then all of a sudden you forget to make the turn into your parking garage. Now you've made a mistake. And that's because your mind was wandering away onto other topics. That, I think, illustrates very nicely what may be happening here with CDD, and that is that they're not fully engaged in the primary activity, and instead they're off daydreaming and mind-wandering about other things. I want to emphasize we don't know that for sure, but I find that to be a very good description of the patients that we've seen.
You've said this before, but personally this rings a bell. It's like when they're driving, that's the primary task, but the daydreaming is the secondary task, and the trouble comes is when the secondary task interrupts the primary task. In other words, you're distracted off on that, hence you miss the turn when you're driving.
That's right.
And I illustrate that because we've done some shows with some people inattentive, and they describe kind of a metacognition thing of how their mind is wandering. In one specific interview we did, the person was sitting there and realized that their cat was interrupting them because the other cat was having some difficulty, and they weren't really present because their mind was off somewhere else. Now, I don't know if that's CDD or whatever, but I only share that with you because for those people that are out there, you may or may not be able to identify, and I thought you articulated that really well.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that because in mind wandering like this or this kind of daydreaming, we all do this, just like we're all occasionally inattentive, but we all don't have ADHD. We all engage occasionally in this kind of mind wandering and we make a few mistakes. Where it becomes a disorder is when you're doing it far more often than other people and it's leading to adverse consequences. It's interfering with major life activities. And at that point, you have crossed the line into having a disorder. If people would like to read more about such cases, Scientific American Mind, which is a magazine that Scientific American publishes, did a beautiful article in March of 2013 in their March issue describing cases of mind wandering. And if you read it, you will be also reading what I think we would call this concentration deficit disorder. So that's a very illuminating resource if people are curious about just what do cases of mind wandering or CDD look like. You can you can look there. Now, we did briefly allude to the fact that there are differences between ADHD and CDD in other things besides comorbidity. There are differences in impairment, and it helps to emphasize that both disorders are very impairing disorders. In our U.S. survey, we found that in terms of education, in children and adults, CDD was as bad as ADHD at interfering with your ability to function well in educational settings, whether that is elementary school all the way up through college or your workplace. We also found that in adulthood, CDD was worse in job performance, that where ADHD certainly was impairing, people who had CDD rated their degree of impairment even worse than people with ADHD. That's very telling because I think that's where the accuracy problems are showing up. They're really struggling not just at getting work done, but at getting it done right. We found that very illuminating. On the other hand, there were places where ADHD was much worse. Driving was a good example. Child rearing and paying attention to what your kids are doing. Managing your money and your household. And also in social relationships with others, ADHD is a much more devastating disorder, largely because of that impulse control problem and that emotion regulation problem that goes along with it. CDD, on the other hand, people with CDD have friends. They just don't have as many. They tend to be somewhat shy, a little withdrawn, perhaps apprehensive, a little socially anxious, which are not things that describe people with ADHD very closely. So there were areas in which these two disorders were quite distinct from each other and other areas where both led to impairment, as in school, but sometimes one was a little worse than the other.
Now, we're going to need to go to a break in a second. When we come back, I do want to talk about treatment and different types of things. But before we do, I've also heard you talk about this, that CDD is really impactful at school and work, not as much outside of those domains, where ADHD is really kind of more pervasive. And I think that's interesting because it's kind of telling it's the errors and stuff that are there that really impact school. And you also described the temperament of these people, because if they're not, if they don't have conduct issues, they tend to be really, really nice, and they're coming through and being diagnosed, the hypothesis is a couple years late, and they're coming in a different direction. They're coming like from the LD area, not necessarily from psychologists. And that space is just fascinating to me because it can really illuminate some of the differences here, because if CDD is really confined to I don't know what the right word is, to that work environment, not saying ADD is, it can help understand those differences. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, that's quite right. We have found that, as you've pointed out, there are unique characteristics to the personality traits of these people. The CDD person, as you've pointed out, is a very likable person. They're just not getting a lot of stuff done, and what they do get done isn't very isn't correct. But they're not offensive or aggressive or impulsive or talkative or emotional or angry and impatient. They're actually very pleasant people, but they're failing. And as a result, because of their failure at school or in the workplace, they often come to us through the route of the learning disabilities sector of professional services rather than through psychiatry. But that doesn't necessarily mean, just because they're nice doesn't mean they don't have a disorder or that they're not impaired. They have both. But they're quite different. And as a result, because they're not so aggressive, people tend to overlook these people and socially promote them when, in fact, they're still struggling and they need help.
Absolutely. There's one other comment that I wanted to make before we go to the break, and I can't remember what it is.
I know you and I spoke before the show about the causes, and I can just briefly say we don't know. There is virtually no research on what causes CDD, whereas we have a ton of research on ADHD and its neurological and genetic contributions. There's a little bit of glimmering in the genetics area. There's only one study, but it found that CDD seemed to be as inherited as ADHD was. But there are no studies of neuroimaging, no studies of the brain, no other studies of molecular genetics and that sort of thing. So we got a long way to go to understand what is causing CDD.
Oh, I remember when I said, we're going to go to break, I'm going to come back and talk to treatment, but before we do that, one thing that I had heard you speak of that I just want to throw out there is those with CDD, there's social shyness, if you will, they're more passive and a little bit more withdrawn.
Yes.
That's accurate reflection, I'm not misrepresenting that, right?
No, that's exactly the case. In fact, they're almost the opposite of people with ADHD, who are usually talkative, outgoing, gregarious, but along with that can be a little socially sticky and emotional and disruptive.
Yep. And, Dr. Barkley, years ago, back in the DSM-4 days, the three different types, we did a show, the mathematical combination of all the different symptoms for the different types, excluding core movement conditions and intensities, there was like 18,000 different combinations that we used to use that tongue-in-cheek to sit there and say, which version of the 18,647 do you have as a way to illustrate that once you've seen one person with ADHD, you've seen one person with ADHD. And what I've learned from you over the years is that when I'm coaching people sometimes, I'll notice they have more issues with the emotional regulation than the attention side and kind of vice versa. And I never looked for that until I really kind of had learned from you. And I'm illustrating that because as we talk about some of these things like social shyness and stuff like that, it's not an absolute. You can't sit there and say this person's socially shy and they have errors and so they must have this. We're just trying to say these are the types of things that the normative data is starting to bring out as a place to begin to understand this as a separate condition on a normative basis, not an individual basis, because there can be lots of variability among individuals.
Yes, in both disorders. Absolutely right, Jeff.
Going to a break real quick. Again, everyone, go to Dr. Barkley's website and just immerse yourself in the information. Check out his books. It's at russellbarkley.org. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back. We're having another great conversation with Dr. Barkley, enlightening us on concentration deficit disorder. And moving into this segment, Dr. Barkley, I want to talk about treatment of this. And to me, there's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is we don't know a lot about treatment here, although I do want you to kind of talk about what we do know and what we suspect. But to me, the good news is we have hope, because as we dig into this, and one of the things that we hope is that you out there in the public will listen to some of this and have conversations with your mental health providers and we get an education, and we call for research. The good news is if in fact this turns out to be a different condition altogether and we get the diagnosis, there's hope, because we can actually focus on treatments that actually work for this, because we've already determined that there's a difference here and we actually can help some people, which before we were probably applying old paradigms that didn't work because we weren't paying attention to the right thing. So can you speak to us a little bit about treatment?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I think it is worth emphasizing, as you just did, that we don't know how to treat this condition as yet, and major advances in treating it are probably not going to come along until we have a better understanding of what is the mental deficit, what is the underlying psychological deficit that is driving this pattern of symptoms. Is it mind wandering? Is it a different kind of attention, such as a problem with orienting rather than a problem with sustaining attention, which is what ADHD is? We just don't know that. Meanwhile, what people are doing is what we usually do. We start experimenting with things that might make a little sense and see if they work or not. It's more of a practical or applied approach to learning about treatment. So let me cover some of the major treatment modalities and just give you what we know.
Yep.
I'm going to start with medication because, as you know, that's a major intervention for ADHD.
Yep.
Here we don't know an awful lot. There were some early studies of stimulants with people who were ADD or inattentive only. Now, mind you, we don't know whether these people had CDD, but a lot of them do in hindsight. So what those studies suggested is that the ADHD stimulants were only modestly helpful. They didn't hurt people. They didn't cause a lot of side effects, or they weren't detrimental. They just weren't very impressive or very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
In one study I did, only 20% of the kids who had this inattentive CDD-like presentation responded to the medication that we were using, whereas 93% of people with ADHD responded to that medication. That was very telling. We also found that if they were going to respond at all to these stimulants, it was always at the lightest dose, the starting dose we tried. Whereas with ADHD, the doses of medication we often have to use to control the disorder effectively are at least moderate level and sometimes higher. So it might be that the stimulants might be helpful for CDD, but if so, it's going to be at a very low, much lower dose, and it's not going to help most of them. That is, if this pattern holds up. But I want to emphasize, we don't know that yet.
Yep.
There was one study of the non-stimulant atomoxetine, which goes under the brand name of Strattera. That study was done with CDD symptoms in individuals, and it found that the drug worked whether the CDD was there alone or whether it overlapped with ADHD. So that really is the only drug study that's been published so far, but it suggests that perhaps this norepinephrine drug, this Strattera, might be of some benefit here. Now, there are some hypotheses that we have, some suggestions that other drugs might be useful here. Nobody's tried serotonergic drugs, the SSRIs yet, that we use for anxiety and depression, but they might be of some use. Why is that? Because anxiety and depression are the two most common coexisting disorders with CDD. So that might be worth a shot in some future research studies. Also, we know that certain drugs that treat obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, those might be useful here, particularly if CDD involves obsessional thinking and pathological mind wandering, because some of the anti-obsessional drugs, such as luvoxamine or Luvox, may be useful here. We don't know that yet. Let's also look at the alertness problem in SCT or CDD. These people often complain of problems with wakefulness, with arousal, with daytime sleepiness. Could we be looking at a mild form of narcolepsy called hypersomnia, where people have trouble with daytime sleepiness? We don't know that yet, but studies have recently been done with college students with CDD that shows that they do have more problems with daytime sleepiness and hypersomnia. Well, all of that might suggest, how about some of the anti-narcoleptic drugs, like modafinil, for instance? So I want to come back and emphasize again to your listeners, we don't know if the drugs I've just mentioned are useful, but if we had to speculate about what future studies should focus on, these would be sort of the drugs we'd like to test to see if they might be helpful. Now, a second intervention is behavior modification, which works very well at helping people with ADHD. And it turns out that two studies have found that the use of rewards and reorganizing the environment around the individual and prompting them as to what they need to be doing at these key points of performance work just as well for people with CDD as with ADHD. So, you know, the old behavioral modification stuff might well pay out here. Now, as you mentioned earlier, cognitive therapy, which did not work for ADHD in children or adolescents, but did work for adult ADHD when it was targeted at their executive deficits. That has not been tried with CDD. So
okay.
Let's not throw the baby out with the bath here
yep.
and turn away from cognitive therapy for children and teens who have CDD. We need to go back and study it because I think cognitive therapy is going to turn out to be very useful for these people where it wasn't very useful for ADHD children and teens. That's just a hunch, but
yeah,
given the nature of the disorder,
hunch.
Cognitive therapy would seem to be something
okay.
quite useful for them. And then you mentioned it already, Jeff, and that is that social interventions for social
mm-hmm.
deficits might be better for CDD than they are for ADHD, where they don't work very well. We're talking here about traditional social skills training. Social skills training, it turns out, works best for shy, withdrawn people and is not as good at helping people who are disruptive
yeah.
and impulsive. And because CDD is often linked to social
yep.
withdrawal, that alone would suggest that social skills training ought to be revisited to help these people with their withdrawal, passivity, and social shyness.
Did I hear? Okay, I might be curious. Somebody was talking about social skills training actually in groups with ADD actually kind of amps up the group. Am I mistaken?
No. Actually, what has been found, and this is very interesting, is that if you treat ADHD kids in groups for social skills training, 25% of them get worse, and it's called deviancy training. And the reason they get worse is that you've mixed less aggressive children with ADHD with highly aggressive ADHD children, and the aggressive kids train up the other children to become more aggressive. So there actually are
yep.
side effects to some of these psychosocial treatments, and that's a good example of social skills training can backfire sometimes if you don't pay attention to the level of aggressiveness of the people you're putting into the groups. So we recommend against social skills training for ADHD children because it simply hasn't been shown to work. Now,
yep.
that said, I do want to point out there's a very nice experimental program at the University of British Columbia by a researcher called Amori Makami. She has redesigned social skills interventions for ADHD, and her new program called Friendship Coaching is proving to be very useful. But it differs from traditional social skills training in that it focuses on training parents to become social skills therapists and to use the natural flow of social interactions for training and not to pull these kids out of the normal environment to work with them on social skills. But none of this has been tried yet with CDD, but I'm betting that the CDD cases would respond even better
yep,
to social
yep.
skills training because of its emphasis on helping them cope with their anxiety, withdrawal, and
yep.
their just apprehensiveness.
Yep. You know, as we've talked about this, it's creating such a case that there's such a difference here. And what I really want to drive home in what I'm excited about here is, you know, that old saying, the definition of insanity is repeating the same steps expecting a different outcome. And I think that this crowd, if in fact it's a different kind of condition, the short-term relief is we'll at least quit reapplying things that aren't working, because that can be as detrimental or frustrating to me when you keep just trying harder and it doesn't work and you're not moving anywhere when people have an expectation it's supposed to work. So we can move away from that. It's a small pressure. But then the hope of we can get more research and more understanding about this, and we can do some customized stuff that will help the people, that's exceptionally exciting. Before
yes.
we kind of close, can you just talk about, you touched on this a little bit earlier, you can have CDD, you can have ADHD, and you can have both. And the thing about having both is it's like a double whammy. It's stacked on top of each other because if you've got both, it does make things a little more difficult. Am I misrepresenting that?
No, that's precisely what we found in the national survey, which, by the way, was the first
mm-hmm.
study of adults with SCT ever published. That survey showed that, you know, if you had both disorders, you were markedly more impaired across the board in all 15 domains of life we surveyed, from education to occupation to social functioning. And that's also evidence that these are separate disorders, because if they weren't, if SCT was just ADHD, then the combination wouldn't be any worse than ADHD would be. But because it is unique and it is different, when they're coupled together, together. They bring the deficits and the impairments associated with both. And as you point out very nicely, it is a double whammy. You don't want both of these disorders because those are the most impaired people in our survey. But it's worth pointing out that you can have CDD alone. And one of the points I think we ought to make before closing is that the reason we're trying to separate out CDD is that if somebody has pure CDD and they get diagnosed and treated as if they have ADHD, that is mistreatment. They are not going to be treated well. They are not going to, I think, find that the medications are going to be as useful. And certainly, if they go out and start reading the trade books on ADHD, it's not going to represent them. They're going to be reading things that have no application to them. So as you point out, we need to make sure that we don't, I think, keep repeating mistakes here and calling this the same attention disorder when it isn't, and it deserves separate treatment and respect as its own right.
Well, we've covered an enormous amount of material. I hope that our listeners, you've been enlightened. I mean, this has been some great stuff. I know you've been working on this for a while, Dr. Barkey. Can you think of anything that we've missed that we just need to kind of, that's pointed to point out before we wrap it up? I mean, we've...
Well, I think what I would emphasize is, remember, there's no official diagnosis yet called CDD. So if you go and ask for this, you're not going to get it because most clinicians aren't familiar with it. So my advice to people is, if you think you have this, and you want to go see a mental health professional, particularly one who's familiar with ADHD, to get evaluated and possibly diagnosed, you would be wise to go to my website and print out the fact sheet on CDD and take it with you and share it with your professional, because you can upgrade their knowledge very quickly by sharing this research review with them, and then maybe you'll make some headway in your diagnosis and your treatment. But don't just assume that the professional community knows what we talked about today, because your show is now light years ahead of what the average professional has learned about this second attention disorder.
And I want to emphasize the mental health professionals and the doctors out there, they're, you know, they've got to run a business, they've got to see patients, and they've got to keep up with things. And Dr. Barkley, you're on the forefront of some of this stuff, and there's only so many hours in a day. You take a look at these people, they got families, they got their own stuff. And sometimes they can't. And one of the, I'm always so honored that you're coming on the show, because by educating the people, you can begin to bring this information to them and actually help for all of our good. So, you know, providing these resources and actually coming on the show can be very, very helpful. And I'm really glad that you brought up, arm yourself with the information, walk in, because if you start talking this, they're likely not going to be as aware of it yet. Today, what I learned is there's some very distinct differences in here, and that there's likely something that's different and be useful. So, with that, Dr. Barkley, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me again, Jeff. Always fun to be on your show.
Absolutely. Everybody, again, go to russellbarkley.org. Again, russellbarkley.org, and catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.
Take care.